tell you something very fascinating is we've been learning together for a little while, and I'm this year concurrently I'm also learning the biography of reading the biography of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, because I figured while we're learning his Torah, let's learn a little bit about his life. What's remarkable is how they're all related. So his father actually passed away when he was at the age of 16. And one of the things that the biography talks about is how he had a deep sense of responsibility to his family, to his parents, to his mother, to his siblings while he was still a young man. At this point, trying to learn, trying to earn a parnasa, trying to pull things together. And it's fascinating that if you notice, if you go through the Sichos Musar, by Vayigash, he already has four separate ma'amorim on the title of Achrayos, which means responsibility. We learned one of them. Right, we learned one a few weeks ago in Vayeshev. We learned that was Achrayos, I think, Gimel. But what's fascinating is just the reflection of his own life experience is such a remarkable thing. So as we go through, maybe I have an opportunity to sharing some aspects of his own life as he expresses it in his Torah life. So let's learn in the meantime. This is an unbelievably powerful piece over here. This is transformative in our perspective of life, as most of them are, but this is just remarkable in so many ways. Here we go. Let's learn. We're going to start at the beginning. We're not going to do it all at all, but just to focus on some salient points. This is one of the most curious midrashim, which is on Parshas Vayigash, and it is actually one which has got a lot of press. So we've heard a lot about this, but let's start at the beginning. So the first paragraph is Chazal. Chazal say, "V'lo yachlu achi echov la'anoisasoy kiniv halu mipanov." So Yosef reveals himself. It's that critical moment, that emotional buildup, and they can't answer him because they're so scared. Pirush Rashi b'imnei habusha, because they were embarrassed. The Omru Chazal quoting the Yalkut in Vayigash says, "Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Eleazar, oy lanu miyayim hadin, oy lanu miyayim hatoychecha. Woe for us on the day of judgment. Woe for us on the day of retribution." That doesn't mean to say that Shvatin, that means us, regular people on the regular street today. Woe for us on the day of judgment. That's what's being said. Okay? Yosef, katnon shabashvatim haya. Yosef was the youngest of all the shvatim. V'lo yachlu echov la'anoisasoy, ki nivalo miponav. Lechashriyavu ha-Kadosh Baruch Hu, v'yachiyach kol echad ve'echad lefi ma'asav al-achas, kama v'kama. This is Yosef who's talking to his brothers. When the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to come in front of all of us and say, talk about our actions, oh boy, woe be upon us for that day when HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows up our own actions. So that's the Midrash, very famous Midrash. This is such a well talked about, such a fascinating subject. We're going to take a completely new slant on it. But he has his question. The question is pretty obvious. We don't need to do the question inside. But the question is that what's the Teuchecha? Meaning, there's no Teuchecha literally means like a rebuke, right? All Yosef said, just to be clear, Yosef didn't make any accusation. He just said, "Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. You sold me here. Ha'odavicha is my father. Is my father still alive?" He wasn't demanding judgment. He wasn't setting up a court case. There was no teichacha here, right? He says in the next line,
he uttered those words previously in the previous parasha as well. How's your father doing? Is your
right,
father?
Right, he knows his father's there. He knows his father's there, right? So there's slower, no issue. Yeah. Just in his own words, Yesh is born. Hechan oyes hatochacha b'dvar shel Yosef le'achav. Hare lo yama lohem elo dvarim elu. Ani Yosef o'odavichai. U'miyad la'acharov k'siv. V'lo yachlu achov le'nasasar k'nivah l'mpionov. All he said is, "I'm Yosef and is our father still alive?" So the perhaps the relevant emotion going through their hearts right now might be, as Rashi said, which is embarrassment or fear or... But the idea of this being a moment of retribution is hard to understand. Mm-hmm. So famously, there's a Beis HaLevi over here. The Beis HaLevi says a very, very, very famous idea here, which most people are aware of, and if you're not, this is necessary to know. And that is that the Beis HaLevi says, "You just got up in front of me and made this entire speech, Yehuda, on your soapbox saying that you can't, that I'm such a cruel person to take away this child from his parent, because if you were not to return and Binyamin's not with you, then how would it be you're going to kill our father because you're abandoning your brother in slavery in the hands of this foreign agent?" So Yosef is saying to them essentially, "As well, didn't you think about that when you sold me? Like, so when it came 22 years ago and you had the thought of returning to your father without me because you sold me, You didn't think about everything you just said now. So Oilon Yolam HaTachachos is the Beis HaLevi famously is when your own arguments, is when your own excuses are undone by your own actions. Right? I mean, say, Yosef didn't say anything, he just simply put together their actions and their words, and they didn't square. So that's what he's saying is that when we're going to be measured up in Shemaim, we're not going to be measured up against necessarily an objective scale so much as our own scale. Right? The things we say about people, when we judge people for things, and we do the same things ourselves, well, that's going to be brought to, we're going to meet ourselves then. That's what the Beis HaLevi says. Very powerful, powerful idea. Very scary idea, which means to say is that we've got to be consistent human beings, okay? Now, that's famous, famous Beis HaLevi. And I thought that was where he was going. I was so excited. I started reading this piece, and I said, oh, he's absolutely different. Brilliant, but completely different insight. Here is Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz's insight. And I want to, for a moment, as powerful as the Beis HaLevi is, let's try to just, we're just to put that out of our minds for a moment, because that belongs in its own, it deserves its own space. The Rav Chaim Shlevitz has a different idea. Here's what he says. Mikan nilmad, in this next paragraph, third paragraph in, Mahi mausa shel teichacha. Let's understand what retribution means. Ki eina teichacha divrei kivushin umusa. It doesn't mean to say, you know, like getting up there and fire and brimstone and guilt and stuff like that. Kifi she'anu regilim lachshov, like we think. It is establishing a person on their own claims. When you realize your own words are no longer relevant, that's Tochacha. Sounds a little bit like the Beis HaLevi, but here's how it's different. What is he saying? He means to say, Ani achichem hakaton, I'm your younger brother, Shemachartem osi, that you sold me l'eved. V'arei ani lifneichem melech u'moshel b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. And now I am the ruler of the entire world. K'chol devod divrei achalamos asher cholam. Like I dreamed. Like I told you. V'her olohem sh'af sh'heim b'michirosoi l'eved. Niskavnu levatel es chalamosov. When you sold me, you wanted to annul and put an end to my dreaming. Dafka mechirazu hi shekirva es kiyom hachalom. Va'al yoda ala al kisei malchusai. It was only through the sale which allowed me to be sitting here now. What chance would I have at the viceroy's seat in Egypt? I mean, really, a Hebrew, an Ivri going to Egypt? The only way he could possibly have a shot at that was the unusual circumstance through his being a slave, through being in the prison, and the Vashara Mashkim at the right time, all the things that needed to happen for that to work. He says, "Not mizeh nochechu ha'achim lodas ki ta'us gedolai ha'isa biyadam." They had a tremendous mistake. Ve'richom es Yosef shaloi koro, when they treated him in the way that they did. Uvechoshvam ki ma'aseim Yarchiku v'yavatlu es devarov, ba'od shema'asei yedeihem hem kirvu v'kimu es devarov. So their actions, they thought their actions would stop him, their actions furthered him. They became the vehicle to the means they were trying, to the ends they were trying to stop. That's what is happening. Now, that's Agdola B'yosef Lirois, ki nefchu p'nei ha'dvorim min ha'kotzeh el ha'kotzeh. The Tochacha was the realization that everything they had done had in fact advanced the cause they were trying to stop. That means that Yosef isn't simply an annoying younger brother. That he was in fact prophesizing truly. And that was their great embarrassment. Interesting perspective. So far from they thought they were aiming for B, and it turned out they ultimately were actually collaborated with Yosef to get to A in the opposite side. So they realize what's the feeling they're sensing now? What attribution? What emotion do you attribute to this? Guilt. So it could be guilt, but it's even more that the word I would give is. Is almost the helplessness and responsibility at the same time, if you think about it. Meaning, we tried so hard to do something, and we absolutely did not achieve that, so we're helpless. At the same time, responsibility, so we actually did this to you. You see, it's like both emotions at once. Then, Mikan Amar Mishon ben Lazar, Oilan and Yolan Elam Adin, Oilan and Yolam Taichacha, woe to us, the rest of us, all the rest of the Jews, for the day of our judgments. Shim Kasher Akaton Sheba Achin, Heamid Esachov Ala Emes, Venigrima Busha Ubehala Kazais Lachim Hagdolim Shiftei Ka. Al achas kama vakama lechashiyava kolish baruch hu v'yamides kol echad ve'echad al shtah ta'usai mi yakilenu. Meaning we also try to do things enough. We also have things that we try to orchestrate. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to show you, ta-da, you ended up with my plan, but look at the mess you made along the way.
God gets the last laugh.
Right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to get the last laugh. But in the meantime, look what we did. Right? So that's what's going to be presented in front of us. So it's not so much like the Beis Halevi's ideas, our own actions versus our own claims. It's really a divine plan versus our plan. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, our place in that plan we're going to see is smaller than we imagined. That's what seems to be being said over here. But we need to dig deeper because we haven't really got to, this is not really the meat yet. We haven't got to the meat of this. You can see the pattern, right? The pattern is the human worthlessness in the divine plan, in the sense that their actions really didn't accomplish what they expected to. Now, at this point in time, I'm feeling pretty predeterministic, right? So I'm feeling like, okay, so what do I have? What point do I have in this? So I wanted to just move into one. His next argument is one which relates to parenting. Very scary idea. In the same way of how powerful we have a space in parenting. He says, "Al pi hadvarim ha'elu." Based on this, he suggests, Navinus ma'amoram zal ala kosul vayecharad Yitzhak charada gadola ad mo'od. Yitzhak had a terrifying moment of fear. Ad mo'od. When was that?
After the brachos with Yaakov.
So let's clarify the exact moments. Okay, so he's given Yaakov, the Yaakov we'll call Esav number one, the brachos. And as Esav number one is walking out, in walks Esav number two, the real Esav. And he says, "Can I have brachos?" And he says, "Who are you?" He says, "I'm Esav." He says, "But who was this who just came?" And then Esav says, "Oh, it's Yaakov who stole my brachos, who tricked me now twice." At this point, Vayecherad Yitzchak Charada Gedola Ad Mo'od. By the way, the Torah doesn't always use the word Mo'od. Mo'od means a lot. So this means to say, when the Torah talks about an excessive emotion, it means this is really petrifying. So now, the Rashi says, Rashi ra gehinam pesucha mitachtav, he saw the gehinam open below him when he realized what had happened. Amru Chazal, the Bereishis Rabba, says the following, Amar Rabbi Chama, Bar Chanina, Mo'od, micharada shecharad al gabei hamizbeach. What does it mean, mo'od? Mo'od can actually be a relative term, meaning more than what? Or more than what he experienced on the mizbeach. Which mizbeach?
Har Moriah.
When he was on the Akedah. So as a knife was positioned above his own neck, he was clearly experiencing fear. No matter how great a tzaddik he was, anybody experiences fear at that point in time. But the fear he experienced upon realizing that he'd been tricked by his younger son was greater than the fear of imminent slaughter. That's what the Midrash says. Pirush, Shehoyso Charoda Zu Shel Yitzchak Gedola Yosei Min HaCharoda Shehoyso Lo Beshas Shineka Lo Gam Mizbeach, at the time that he was in the Akedah. Pelichora, Ma Gorom Lo Charoda Gedola Kuzo? What's so scary? V'tzorich Lo Ma Shenizdaazea Berega Shenizbara Lo Kitous Hoyso Biyodo Kol Yomov Baruch Hosoi Es Esav. What he finally realized is his evaluation of Esav was incorrect for all these years. The way he had looked at the son, and we're talking about decades, right? We're talking about, I believe, the Medrash points Yaakov, which means Esav, at the age of 60. So we talk about 60 years of a conception of a particular individual who's your child, and it was an incorrect perception. Ki ad ato hayosavu ki le Esav magia sabrachos. For whatever reason, he believed that Esav was the true recipient. Vihinei lepesa, at one critical moment, nisgalsa loy dimusoi ha'amitis shel Esav. The real, true figure of Esav is revealed to him. Shegehinam pesucha lo mitachtov, and he realizes that Gehinam is below, open below him. V'Yakov hu ha'ro'i levracha, and Yaakov really should have got the bracha. Rega ze shel amida al hata'us ha'mushreshes etzloi zman rav hu rega shel charada gedola ma'od, ad ma'od. When you realize mistakes, most people in their lives never get to that point. Most people die with them as conceptions. You know, like we like to corroborate the ideas that we have enough. This was the moment where he actually was not able to, where everything fell apart. By the way, he doesn't dig it in right now, but there's so much to be said about why this realization was such a profound one. You know, like the way Rav Hirsch shows it, that the reason why Rivka had to trick him, Bekitzer, was that why couldn't she communicate with him? So Rav Hirsch argues that she communicated with him for years and years and years, and he never listened because he was such a tzaddik, he was such a pure person, he couldn't understand what a deceitful person really meant. He couldn't understand that a person could act in one way and really believe something completely different. It took a Rivka who understood what a lavan was.
So what do you think of Yishmael then?
What did you think about Yishmael, Yitzhak? Good question. We don't really know so much about Yitzhak's interaction with Yishmael. We really have very little. More the relationships we see is the Avram and Sarah relationship with Yishmael. We don't really hear about Yitzhak, which might have been why Sarah herself was so concerned about Yishmael's influence on Yitzhak, because he's such a pure person. When a pure person, an Ola Tamima, looks at an Esav, he has no idea, right, that this person can be so respectful, so frum, so special, and at the same time be a murderer. And, right, so it took a Rivka, grew up, she was roommates with Lavan, you know, so she understood what this kind of business is, so she could see straight through him. But there's no way to convince a Yitzhak that you are being tricked unless you could convince him that he could be tricked. So what did she do? She showed him he could be tricked. At the moment he realized he could be tricked, and he realized everything Rivka had said up to now was correct, and everything fell apart. Right, that's the way Rav Hirsch looks at it, and he's a much bigger system. But think about that. At that moment where he realizes he's been tricked, and therefore that everything about his perception of Esav was incorrect, that was a tremendous fear. So argues Rav Shmulevitz, for oimek ta'amos d'shel davar hu. Let's deepen this idea. Ki ha'tous ein lo b'dato uvisvarasa shel ha'odam gereda. It's not just in the way the person thinks about the world. Ela she'odam shechai b'tous, Harei al pi ta'us zu mechalkel hu es kol ma'asav yomim rabim. A person will sustain all their interactions and everything that happens around them through the prism of this mistake. Uve hisgalos ha-ta'usam, ha-ta'us ha-omdim neneged einei odam kol ma'asav v'kol pulasav v'noichachu l'adas she'eno kishura. When a person realizes the mistake, then they see all their actions, all their theories, all their illusions or delusions, or suddenly come in front of them because this is the way they've been living. There's nothing more scary than that. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes in front, as the Midrash says by Yosef, and we are confronted with all our actions, it doesn't just mean to say the one action that we made a mistake in. It means to say all the other actions which were colored because of that decision that we're not willing to renege on. That's what we're going to have to confront. Everything that was surrounding that. You'll see his own actions. There's nothing left to stand on. Everything a person had been trying to do, aiming for, falls apart. Woe to us for that terror over there. So here we go. Now, so let's think about this for just a moment. You know, it reminds me of my most famous, my personally, one of my favorite stories is about, you know, the story about these two fellows walking along the side of the road. And it's toward dusk, it's hard to see. And they see something in a bush. And the one fellow says to his friend, you know, Bert, did you see that cat? And, you know, Bert says, you know, Mike, and that was definitely a bird. He said, no, it was definitely a cat. Cat, bird, bird, cat, bird, cat. Right? So finally, Bert pulls out $5 and he says, $5 that it's a cat. So Mike says, you know what? He says, $10 that it was a bird. So they pick up a rock, they throw it into the bush, and out flies a gray form. So, you know, so the one fellow turns to his friend, he says, no. He says, he says, what do you say now? He says, well, you know, I've got to tell you something. If I had never seen with my own eyes, I would never have believed I saw a cat fly. Right, but that's what our lives are. Our lives carry. We carry on. We have many flying birds in our lives, flying cats in our lives. Right. So the point is that what he says is that that moment when a person is confronted with that indescribable experience of realization that there's nothing that it all falls apart, then everything else also falls apart, and we're confronted with the rest of our lives, which was all focused towards that illusion. That's the problem over here. Meaning, when you think that you are trying to stop this, you believe that everything was all right because you're stopping Yosef's dreams, and now suddenly you realize that you facilitated his dreams, and everything you did bad up till now was getting to that. Oh boy, right? So let's. But now, there's something so deeply psychologically dangerous over here with us, and this is the psychological kernel of what he's saying. This next paragraph. This is so powerful. This is such a powerful idea, because we do this all the time. Here's it. Uve emes. In truth, here's the psychology of it. Yodea ha'adam ki harbe min ha'masim she'aseh v'chelek gadol mipu'ulasov einam kashura. We know that we make mistakes. We know that we do things which are inappropriate and illegitimate. Ela she'sovuhu la'asoysom le'tachlis zu o acheres. Why do we allow ourselves to do things? Because oftentimes the ends will justify the means. Right? I know it's not exactly right to go through that light, but I really need to get somewhere, right? I have an important appointment. I'm doing an important ches. Whatever it is that we tell ourselves, the ends will justify the means of whatever it is necessary. Uladatoi hatachlis matira puulois elu. Ach oilonu biroisoi ki maasov loheviu el hatoicheles shekiva lo. Woe to us the moment we realize that what we did not lead to where the destination we thought it was, the ends we actually believed in. And then when we reach the wrong destination, all that's left is the illegitimate action, which didn't get us to where we hoped we'd be getting. You see what's happening here? What a shocking statement. We know that those means were inappropriate. We know that it was the wrong thing to do. We know that. He says, and we only would do it because of the ends. When the ends disappear, now you're left holding the bag. See that? What happened to the brothers? They said, you know what? Selling brothers is really not an appropriate action, right? It's not just, you know, not done on a daily basis, right? So they know that it's a wrong thing, but they believe that this fellow is dangerous. They believe these dreams are going to lead to, for whatever reason, they believe, so they rationalize. So the ends are going to justify the means. But what happens when the ends are different now? Now Yosef says, I'm Yosef. So I'm here. So meaning your sale actually got me to this position, which means that now you're culpable for the sale because God has condoned the dreams. So now all you're left holding now is the fact that you sold your brother for no purpose. You see, the ends are gone.
But it all worked out though, so then it doesn't matter.
You're right. So the fascinating part about it is in the end, it would work out. But now let's do a we'll call it a frame by frame analysis. So here they are throwing him into the pit and holding him out to the Arab traders, right? So at this point in time, so did it help in the end? Yes, in the grand scheme of things. But what about your actions right now? What gave you the license to think this?
But if they're reflecting at the end of their life, this was a terrible. If we didn't do this terrible thing, we wouldn't have ended up in the great position we ended up.
Right. So this gets into a much greater shear, which is the discussion around the point of what's called gezeira and bechira. Right. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants one thing, and we have actions which seemingly somehow we have freedom in those actions, but ultimately they're coming to the same destination. Right. Yes. But the problem is like this: is that when they were thinking about it, they were not thinking about Hashem's destination. Right. So in the end of the day, you know, we could say, you know, I hijacked the plane. Right, because I, you know, and it turned out well, right? There was somebody who was on the plane who went into labor, and we had to go down, and we say, you know, say that because of the hijacking, we saved that woman's life. It's like, but you hijacked a plane, you weren't saving a woman, right? You understand? Meaning, like, in the end of the day, you have to answer for what you're intending to do at that point in time. And now there's, and even what you're intending to do, the ends don't even matter anymore. So it all falls apart.
I was just to say that. For Yosef, it worked out. For the brothers, it didn't.
Meaning, to answer
what you were saying is, Yosef, it went according to his plan, like he was supposed to become.
Well, yes or no?
So you're right.
The brothers were wrong for selling.
So it's interesting. What the brilliance of Yosef, the humanity of Yosef is Yosef says to the brothers, and just to psuk him after this, he's not focusing on this. He says, don't worry, I'll tell you. So, sent me ahead, which means that Yosef is adopting the bigger picture perspective, right? So he's saying, I am not taking revenge on you because I know that ultimately Hashem wanted me to be here. But that does not condone it from their perspective. right? So that's by the way, just out of interest, in terms of, if you want to broaden the scope of, you know, we'll call it why this is all happening, even Yosef didn't have the full picture, because he, meaning, what could he? He could have got stuck in the narrow perspective, which is, you did it, you try to kill me, I'm going to kill you now, I have power. So he managed to release himself from that, which is just, you're almost Herculean. It's beyond imagination how Yosef could manage to do that, right? We see very few human beings who have ever managed to do that in their lives. And so he releases that, and he says, you know, there's a big picture Hashem wanted to meet over here. But he even missed the fact that this was also part of the machinations of the Brisbane Abbasari, meaning to say, there's numerous cycles of history which are occurring over here. There's the personal cycle, there's the Egyptian cultural, you know, we'll call it social political cycle, and then there's the Jewish history cycle, which is also part of the greater cycle of, we'll call it macro-Jewish history. So there's numerous cycles occurring at once, but it's interesting as to which level you click in. But the one thing we know for sure is the brothers were not thinking about any of those larger circles of while they were doing this, and so therefore they left holding that bag. They wanted to annul his dreams. What will be with his dreams? That it did not work to annul his dreams. The action remains without their well-intended goal. And if you ask them, they'll all agree that selling a brother is not appropriate. That's all you need to say, I'm Yosef. The fact that I'm here shows you the dreams worked out, therefore the ends are gone, therefore you're left with the means. Right? Brilliant insight, and it is so true. It is so true in our lives. So he gives numerous other applications of this. I don't want to dwell because it's an extremely long mimer. But there is one point I would like to focus on, without getting into the nitty gritty. So we're going to skip two paragraphs. I just want to focus on one last point, and this relates to our own resilience. So in the fourth paragraph on this page, it starts with the Gemara in Nedarim. The Gemara says the following: Issa, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashri Shechinosai, Elo Al Gibor VaAshir VaChacham VaAnav. Four prerequisites for being a leader. One is a strong person. One is a rich person, one is a wise person, and one is a humble person. Now, humble and wise are sort of kind of, you know, we'd imagine the more card-carrying kind of abilities you'd like to have in a leader, in a Jewish leader at least, right? The two more curious ones are the strong and the rich. And the reason that's generally understood for this is?
Rich can't be bribed.
Right, so independence, right? I mean to say, when you are rich and you are strong, it doesn't make a difference what people say about you or to you or threaten you, because you have sufficient gravitas that you can make decisions necessary to be made, and you're not going to be intimidated or bribed or, right, as Tevye says, right? What was Tevye's line?
It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong, you're rich.
It doesn't, right, because that's, how do, yeah, it doesn't, if I were a rich man, it doesn't matter if I were right or if I'm wrong, because if I were a wealthy man, right? So what there is a sort of a cheek, a tongue-in-cheek kind of truth to that. And so these are the four prerequisites to a leader. The Gemara then goes on to say, we know that Moshe possessed all four of these. Gibor Dichsev, he was strong. How do we know he was strong? Because it says, Vayifros Esa Oyel V'chulei, that he spread out, he set up the Mishkan. Right? The Mishkan was no small task. Upirish HaRosh Sham Hiksha, the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, has a commentary on the Sa'al of Gemara in Nadarim. And he asks, Tema Ama Lo Yolif Mikrashim. Surely we could learn it out that Moshe Rabbeinu was strong from the fact that he put the curtain over the Mishkan, but the fact that he stood up the crush and the beams. There were many beams around the side which constituted the walls. Do you see Vayakom Moshe Esa Mishkan? Vayasem Es Krush of Ayin Sham. Because of Alzeh Maharsha, the Maharsha, who's a later commentator in the Achronim, asks, Deloi Kasha, that doesn't make sense. Deha Mishkan Iksiv Hukam HaMishkan. We know that when it came to the crush and the beams, it was established by itself, meaning it was set up by itself. Shekom Meilov. Moshe Kosov B'Tanuchum, and the Medrash Tanuchum says, Omar Moshe, Ribbono Shel Olam, Eni Yode Al Amido. Moshe says, Hashem, I don't know, we've got all the pieces here, I see the instruction manual, but I just can't do it, right? So Amalei, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, Asuk B'Yodecha, you do what you can, V'ata Mare L'Hamidoi, V'hu Oymed Me'elov. You push this way, and I'll make sure that it gravitates into the right position. And I'm going to tell you that you did it. The Rosh says, let's learn that Moshe Rabbeinu was powerful from the fact that he stood up to crush him. But that doesn't make sense, says the Maharsha on the Rosh. How could you even ask that? Because Moshe Rabbeinu had no part in picking up the beams. HaKadosh Baruch Hu managed to do it. It just looked like Moshe was doing it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu was really doing it. So there's no gvura there at all. So the Rosh, how could you even ask?
But physical strength, really what Gibor is? We always say Ezer Hu Gibor.
Ah, so it's interesting. Yes, it's interesting. So he's going to get to our definition of strength. So I'm going to move. We're going to skip over just a couple, a paragraph of of the more the nitty gritty here. I'm just going to skip to the top of the next page, the first paragraph, and this is where we're going to close with. Is we never Masha Amru Ena Kodesh Baruch Hu Masha Shchinasa El Al Gibor Nirusha Ena Kavona Lebal Koyak Gadol, like you're saying, Tani. It's not about, you know, he can bench press 270 on Tuesdays, right? Elo gibor hakavana hu lemi she'oiver b'chol koychosav, the person who she'oiveid b'chol koychosav, the person who serves with all these strengths, with all these facilities. U'menatzlon legamra, and he uses every one of them. V'zohi ha'ma'ala ha'nitzreches l'nevo. That's what you need for the prophecy. Ulefize, shapi rikshah rosh sheyesh la'navi, la'avi raya, shayom Moshe gibor mimashe ha'kim es ha'mishkan. Of course, even though he wasn't setting up the Mishkan, we can still ask, maybe you can see his gvura from that. How so? Ki bevadai mashe zocho lakach, she'al yodoi hukam ha'mishkan min ha'shamayim. Of course it came from heaven, that the structure of the Mishkan was set up. Hu rak mashe hishki mishum sheishkia ba'kamoso es kol ha'koychois ha'atzurim b'kirboi. What would Hashem tell him? Is you try your very best, Moshe. Put everything you can into trying to set it up. U'kumoshi omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu asok v'yodechoi. Do what you can. V'hainu v'chol koychoi. With every ounce of energy you have. V'rak ha'asher ha'odam oise b'ishtadlus ad k'tzei gvul ha'yecholes hu'zoiche al yedei kach lovi ela tachlis min ha'shamayim. This is an interesting model. Moshe, I'm asking you to put every ounce of energy into trying to establish the Mishkan, whether it be your mental facilities, your physical facilities, whatever it is that you're putting into it. Do everything you can, and at the moment you can't, then what? I'm going to push it up. Which is actually a very important model for how we live our lives, right? We do a lot, and our HaKadosh Baruch Hu meets us, right? We're at the point where we're not able to do more. The Zeo HaGibor HaMitzi. And this is what real strength is. So if you think about this, let's go back to our discussion beforehand. Means and ends. Who's in control of the ends? Not us. We can be the most well-intended human beings and our life can just fall apart. And on the other hand, we can be the most horrific human beings and everything can just fall into place. Right? We don't control the ends. We see this in so many applications in our life. So what do we control? We control the means. Moshe Rabbeinu was the person who invested every aspect of himself into the means, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "I'll meet you at the end. I'll give you the ends." That's what is being said about the prerequisite for an leader: not strength, but rather investment. Investment, so I can meet you. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling him. That's what the Mishnah says. Coming back to you, Tali, in Pirkei Avos, "V'af bazu shanino, eizo gibor hakovesh yisro." What is a strong person? Who is a strong person? A person who conquers himself. What is he saying? Ein kvishas ha'yetzer ma'aseh yodol shel adam. It is not about what you achieve. It's not about what you necessarily move. Elo ha'amal va'yegia hu mashal mishel adam. What you put in, the means, the effort, is your chance to succeed. Va'kivush hu me'es ha'kodesh baruch hu. But success, conquest, is Hashem's. That's what Gemara says. In Sukkah, Ilmole HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oizro Eni Yocholoi. If a person, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, had not helped us, we would never have succeeded over the Yetzirah. Elo She'en HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oizro El Rak L'mi Shemishtadl B'Kol Koycho L'Achnias Yitzroi. V'Kem Shemin Hatzalas Kol Koycho Esav L'Kach Harei Hu Nikro Gibor. And only that way are we considered strong. So if you think about this, the extrapolation of this whole episode of the brothers is, if, in fact, we don't control the outcomes, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to give you the outcome, then all we are actually ever given schar on is not what we did, but what we tried to do. And the hallmark of a leader is the hallmark of a leader who puts everything into what they tried to do, even though the ends are not dependent necessarily on the actions we put into. And we can think about this is on the one hand very comforting, and on the other hand very deflating. Deflating because, well, that means to say that all the times that I patted myself on the back, doesn't necessarily mean that I was necessarily was a one-to-one, you know, because of my effort, that's why there was a success. On the other hand, it's also very uplifting in the sense that there are many times where I didn't succeed and I put so much into it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not actually measuring you based on what you achieved, but based on what you tried to achieve, even though the achievement may have moved away from you at that point in time. That's why he says later on in the Maamar, we're not going to read inside, but he just says, the Gemara says, there's a famous statement which is said, which is Yogati Umatsasi, which means, I invested and Matsasi. How do you translate the word Matsasi?
I found.
That shouldn't be the right word. It should be Yogati Vehisagti, right? I invested and I achieved. He says, well, obviously. He says, because even when you achieve, it's not achievement. You found it. You lucky fish, right? You just got the right moments. You met the right person, the right interview, the right opening. That's how it worked. You put in a lot of effort, but how many times is the direction that we're going or something completely different happens and we get a completely different sense of achievement? You know, that's why in English we have this terrible way of saying things. We say, I had an idea. Right? You had an idea. You didn't have an idea. You worked all day long. You couldn't think of the solution. You had a shower. And then suddenly into your mind popped an idea, right? And you go out and tell the world, I had an idea. You know, your divine inspiration. So in Yiddish, it's actually, what's the word for an idea? An Einfall. An Einfall means it fell in. It fell in. It's a little more of a humble way of talking about how ideas happen, is that we do a lot of work, but ultimately the inspiration doesn't always come because of us. Right, so this is what he's saying. So this is the flip side of the coin of our responsibility, and it relieves us of achievement because achievement isn't necessarily what we're responsible for. We're responsible for the means, and therefore, if we choose the wrong means, even though the ends might sound like they are right, we'll still be held accountable for those means. Anyways, fascinating idea, thoughts, comments, observations. Very interesting, right?